It's Texas that matters most on Pratt on Texas. Now, here's your Texan in chief, Robert Pratt.
From the True Texan Studio, I'm Robert Pratt, and this is Pratt on Texas. Subscribe free to all the Pratt on Texas shows, long-form interviews, and more at prattontexas.com. Just go over to that podcast page if you want. You can just look in each individual post. Share these links as much as you can. That's how we'll build the online show and make it work. And those of you writing me how much you love podcasts, because you can listen to it all. You don't have to miss any. You can listen to it on your schedule. Well, we can't keep it up without you bringing a lot more downloaders and listeners in. So just keep that in mind. Coming up on Pratt on Texas, Representative Matt Schaefer of Tyler, House District 6, talks with us about his bills to be on to ban gubernatorial overreach in disasters, and admits many of his colleagues are afraid to do their jobs. Abbott hints at ending COVID decrees, but only hints at it 6 months after Florida's truly conservative governor did such. More detail back on our backs our analysis on the big power freeze in Texas comes from hearings in Austin today. And more news of Texas as time allows, my friends. Let's just dive right in. Today in Texas, by the way, is the horrible day I'll never forget when that Arkansas oil man, Jerry Jones, came in and fired head coach Tom Landry after his 29 years with the Cowboys. If you're too young to remember, you need to find out it wasn't done the way it should be done. It wasn't done in a gentlemanly manner. Coach Landry had to find out about it from the press. Then Jerry Jones went down to see him. It was disgusting. It's one of the reasons I'll never like Jerry Jones. All right, my friends, let's Abbott had his let me get to this COVID thing first before I get to the big deep freeze. Abbott says announcement on ending COVID mandates coming pretty soon. Okay, started this almost a year ago, March 13th of last year. Is there light at the end of the tunnel? I don't know. It's a press conference in Corpus Christi today. He was touting a vaccine distribution plan, and he said, we're working right now on evaluating when we're going to be able to remove all statewide orders. We'll be making announcements about that pretty soon. Well, they need to be done. Then we need to remove the people making them. But anyway, it is true. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis did all this stuff in September, 6 months ago. 6 months ago, they've done just fine. Meanwhile, we've stuck by this. Oh, we're just going to tell people how to live their lives. All right, let's get to this big issue on the big... one more thing I want to squeeze in. For you business folks, Comptroller's Office announcing today, Comptroller Glenn Hager, they're going to automatically extend the due date for 2021 franchise tax reports from May 15th to June 15th. So that's the big thing there. Franchise tax reports delayed till June 15th. Governor Abbott gave his televised address yesterday during the local news. He said people are angry. You know, it's all the stuff you'd expect. We need reform of ERCOT. Some of the assurances they gave us turned out to be false. Well, nobody can always predict how all parameters possibilities are going to line up at a given time, but he's talked about how they're going to fight hard in the legislature and deal with the skyrocketing prices that some people who chose variable pricing plans in their retail electric plan, how they're getting soaked. He's going to fight that, and ERCOT must be overhauled. Well, you know, we don't really know that. And the third is power generation. It buckled under freezing winter, and we're going to have all kinds of safeguards. And this was really much about nothing. It was grandstanding, and the fact of the matter is nothing's changed. The issues before the governor and the legislature have been before them for years. The renewable energy policy, how much is safe on the grid, and the other one is all about the capacity market. In other words, whether we ought to charge ratepayers and pay generators to have to keep a large margin of generating capacity for these type of events. These are not new events. Abbott, legislators, they've all dealt with these for years. Nobody's taken action, so don't believe them. Don't believe them when they act like this is all new. Now, you want to hear how bureaucrats talk, people that are government types? They've done a good job overall, but this Magnus guy, who's the chief of ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, the intrastate grid that covers a big part of Texas, but not all of it, covers most people in Texas, He said it worked. What they did work from keeping us going into blackout. He is absolutely right on that. You need to listen to that February 18th podcast where we talk all about in depth how this happened, what was going on hour by hour, minute by minute, so you understand it and you don't depend on people that really don't understand it in the press. Senator Whitmire asked Magnus, though, at ERCOT if there's anything he'd do differently, and he said, no, I wouldn't. That was pretty stupid. Make something up if you have to. Just saying. I mean, because it's not good. That didn't go down well. Most important thing I can share with you on this, where it really does back up the analysis we provided in that podcast from February 18th that I'm talking about, that February 18th version of Pratt on Texas, is from VistraCorp's CEO. Now, they own Luminant. They're big, and they did very well during this. They're not somebody making excuses. They were actually one of the great performers during this disaster. And I want to share his prepared testimony with you. I'm not going to give it. It's a written version, so I'm going to read and comment on it. It is that important for you to hear it. Let's just start, and then when we get to the break, well, then we'll come back after the break and get on with it. I'm not going to read every single sentence, but I'm going to read a lot of it because you need to understand what's going on, and you're going to find out we're right back to what I told you. There's just basically a couple of policy issues. When it comes to winterization, I discussed that in our earlier podcast too about they did make some mistakes, and one of them was after that one a decade ago where we lost gas, they did not do a good job documenting the entire gas supply and making sure power didn't get turned off to that. He covers this in detail. And that is a big failure of the ERCOT planning. That is a big failure. Here we go. It says it's Kurt Morgan, CEO of VistraCorp. We're an Irving, Texas-based integrated retail electricity and power generating business. Go back 140 years through the predecessor company, served more than 2.3 million retail customers through their brands, which TXU Energy, Ambit, Tri-Eagle, and some others. The generation subsidiary is Luminant. It's the largest electricity generator in Texas, powered by a portfolio of plants, natural gas, nuclear, coal, solar, and battery energy storage facilities. And he said, before I outline the events as I witnessed them leading up to and during the winter storm event, I want to tell you that in my nearly 40 years in the energy industry, this event has shaken me like no other. He went on, gave sympathies to people that are suffering from it. He got it, but his company performed. Said in the days ahead, and by the way, this is another example of why you don't, the Democrats and people who say government failed, bureaucrats failed, well, that's the fault of the opposition party. What we really need is more government and more government bureaucrats. How stupid they are. The private sector was getting this right when government was slow, and that's always the way things work. Listen to this. In the days ahead of the winter storm event, Vistra staff meteorologists, that's right, people with skin in the game take care of these things themselves. Good companies do. There are always some that don't perform well. Vistra staff meteorologist alerted us just how cold it would get and how long it would last. This was going to be a historic weather event, not only affecting all 254 counties in Texas, a first to my knowledge, but also much of the continent. Indeed, Monday turned out to be one of the coldest days in Texas in more than a century. May I add in here, so much for global warming. No wonder they changed the word to climate change. Based on this extreme cold, our own model showed electricity demand going up was going to be 10,000 megawatts higher than what ERCOT was expecting for Monday the 15th and Tuesday the 16th. We knew even if everything went perfectly, there would simply not be enough electricity supply to meet demand. We were very concerned. On Wednesday, February 10th, see, this is well in advance, we sounded the alarm and let ERCOT and others know we thought their projections were off. We saw this coming. The financial market saw this coming as prices of gas and power were trading higher. That's right, well in advance of when the cold snap hit. Now, he said we were surprised by an apparent lack of urgency at the level you'd expect during an emergency. Let's pick it up there in a moment on Pratt on Texas.
During the break, log on to prattontexas.com.
Today's Pratt on Texas podcast is sponsored by LubbockWebGuy.com. That's LubbockWebGuy, WebGuy.com. LubbockWebGuy.com. Founded by local resident Chase Powell, Lubbock Web Guy has been providing custom websites and digital marketing solutions for the West Texas community for over 15 years, specializing in custom websites, Google My Business optimization, search engine optimization, pay-per-click campaigns, and content creation. They build websites that build local business. Well, let me tell you how I came about, Chase. After the big prevaricators, just without any explanation still, by the way, canceled the time brokerage agreement I had with their company, my firm had with them, I've just been blown away. How many of our sponsors and people, I haven't been calling people, but they all called me and said, oh, we canceled everything. And then people I don't even know. At least three different businesses that contacted me directly told me that they canceled their web hosting work that apparently Town Square Media, you know, they've spent more time worried about websites than they have their own and others than they have what's on the air for the last many years. Three different people said they canceled their hosting and web work with them. And one of our sponsors called me and said, hey, LubbockWebGuy.com, that they do ours and they do a good job. And he's already picked up some of your listeners. Well, I got in touch with Chase. I knew about his business. He's been around a long time. Don't know him well, but I know that he takes care of the business websites for quite a few folks in Lubbock and does a good job. And so I just want you to know, Chase Powell, if you want to have your website hosted by a professional that's not some big leftist corporation or, you know, dishonest company or whatever they are, you've got an option in the Lubbock area, LubbockWebGuy.com. Chase Powell, get in touch with him. Tell him Pratt sent you, LubbockWebGuy.com. Sponsoring today's Pratt on Texas podcast. How do you make your Green Mountain Grills pellet smoker even better, more useful? Your local dealer can get you the quality accessories you need, like the very popular custom pizza oven that integrates with your pellet smoker's firebox. Every owner should have a thermal blanket on their Green Mountain Grill and a proper grill cover made to fit perfectly to protect your pellet smoker from the elements. See the ever-improving lineup of Green Mountain Grills along with quality made-to-fit accessories at greenmountaingrills.com.
Here's a man who thinks it's wrong not to fly your Texas flag as high as the stars and stripes. It's the Lone Star's Voice of Liberty, Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Back to the testimony given today in Austin from Kurt Morgan, CEO of Lumina, the largest power generator in Texas. And he said, we were surprised, they were warning everybody in advance, said that we were surprised at a lack of urgency at the level you'd expect, urgency. We've been involved in previous weather-related emergencies in Texas, and I've always performed well. We think ERCOT should have had a far greater and more frequent communication with state leaders, regulators, and the public on all this about what was coming. Our Luminant Generation team began preparing for the winter weather last fall, as we do annually, heading into every winter. While much has been made about winterization of Texas plants, Luminant learned a lot from that 2011 weather event. We took the recommendations, made changes and upgrades, and improved significantly. It's important to note that this event was far deeper and involved more frozen precipitation and lower temperatures than in 2011. He then goes in about what they do every year in their meeting, their readiness meetings and all of that, and how they install temporary wind breaks and things like that, and do around-the-clock monitoring. Of course, he also points out that even a lot of this stuff they do when temperatures get to a certain point have really no effect. He said, as we started to realize the potential magnitude of the storm, we made additional emergency preparations. In 2011, you'll remember, some of our units experienced mechanical issues early on in the event. In 2021, our unit stood up well. In fact, we have an 18% market share of the generation capacity in ERCOT, but we estimate we produce 25 to 30% of the power on the grid during the period Monday through Friday. Our singular focus was putting electrons on the grid, often at the expense of making money. Starting in the early hours of Monday, 15 February, this event became a mission to save people and survival of the electric market. Sadly, it did not appear this was the mission of all involved. While the weather created a number of challenges, our primary capacity constraints were due to challenges with receiving a steady supply of fuel for some plants, both natural gas and coal. We also had some challenges with handling coal already on site, given the wet and freezing conditions. In other words, the coal piles that they scoop up froze together. That's what I understand to be the case. Our team was constantly working with the electric utilities, natural gas pipelines, and producers, diesel suppliers, and railroad companies to obtain as much fuel supply as possible so we could put the maximum amount of power on the grid as possible. Unfortunately, the upfront planning and coordination across the natural gas and electric systems were seemingly late and did not identify and address critical points of vulnerability, which, by the way, is basic disaster recovery planning. And you always look for points of common failure. You want to always have duplicate means there so you don't crash everything with a single point of common failure that can take everything down. For Illuminant, winterization at our plants was not our biggest challenge. Our biggest challenge was getting fuel to the plants. While we had some difficulty handling frozen coal at a few plants, our most significant issue was with natural gas. There simply was not the availability to run the network of power plants on this grid. The planning and coordination did not identify important dependencies, and the lack of prioritization of critical equipment led to the power being cut, causing a chain of events that curtailed full gas delivery to power plants. We talked about this in that February 18th podcast. I think it's important to lay out the entire energy chain to fully understand what happened. The first thing I'll point out is the gas system and the power systems are inextricably linked. As you know, power plants fueled by natural gas are the largest source of energy in Texas. Our grid relies on gas to power Texas. As evidence of this, over 60% of our electricity came from power plants fueled by natural gas during the storm, and this level was at significantly curtailed output due to gas system problems. Let me explain why, he says. Before the plant can generate electricity, you have to get natural gas to the plant. In order to move gas on a pipeline at its full capacity, you need to get electricity to the compressors that fill the pipeline. The short version of the story is the gas system didn't function. It was less than maximum capacity due to freezing and insufficient electricity, leaving significant amount of gas-fueled electric generation on the sideline. He then goes into detail on that, and I think this is important enough for people to hear, and I'm going to share that part with you. As is typical, even before the extreme temperature hit, the cold weather began to drive up demand for natural gas, primarily for heating needs and electricity. What wasn't typical, though, was that the widespread cold impacted all of the gas-producing regions. We began seeing freeze-offs occur all along the gas system from the wellheads to the processing facilities and eventually within the pipelines. Pressure in the lines began dropping due to lack of supply and increased demand for gas. With so many aspects of the gas system freezing, the result was large supply curtailments. Additionally, as the gas that was available was being prioritized for distribution curtailments, we learned that gas-fueled power plants were not given any distribution priority at all. So these plants were standing in line with other non-critical gas purchasers at a time when they should have been receiving gas ahead of others. After all, more than 50% of Texas homes rely on electric heat, no less a human need than those using gas heating. At the same time, demand for electricity was rising, but some natural gas-fueled power plants couldn't respond. With some pipeline systems not able to provide adequate pressures, some power plants couldn't operate at full capacity. Others couldn't get any supply and had to shut down. Eventually, as we had feared and predicted, power demand exceeded the available generation output. ERCOT instructed transmission and distribution utilities to begin what should have been controlled rolling blackouts to shed load to prevent more catastrophic grid failure. Our fuel supply issues were exacerbated as power outages hit gas processing facilities, natural gas pumping stations, and electric compressors on pipelines and at power plants. While there were efforts made to restore electricity at these critical infrastructure sites in order to bring gas supply back, the delays further weakened both the electric and gas systems and exacerbated the load shed. For unknown reasons, ERCOT decided to instruct the transmission and distribution utilities to lock down the electric system early Monday morning instead of continuing rolling blackouts, resulting in a bifurcated system of those with power and those without through the duration of the outage. This decision also had unknown and potentially far-reaching adverse implications on retail electric providers, as the allocation of load was uneven across the state. These events show that across the entire infrastructure, we need one, better coordination and communication in total across gas and power systems. See, right now it's all basically just the power people. Well, you got to talk to the people fueling the power people 2, better integration of these systems. 3, more precise prioritization of curtailments. And 4, a complete understanding of the dependencies. There must be an entity with authority that has detailed understanding of both systems. We can all do better. And he talks about what this event's taught them to prepare for worst case scenarios. He said it's fair to debate and potentially consider market design changes in response. That's the paying to have a reserve generating capacity. And he says, look, a lot of people think the electric companies made out big on this $9,000 a megawatt hour. He said when it's all the numbers come in, he thinks they'll all show losses. But the only people that made big money were gas market participants, you know, people that buy natural gas on the futures markets. He said, we learned at the height of the crisis that the critical natural gas infrastructure like electric compressors was not identified in time. When electricity was cut off, it caused natural gas pipelines to lose pressure and prevented some natural gas plants from operating at capacity or at all. He says, given the integrated nature of the electric grid and the gas infrastructure, we have to be able to ensure that gas infrastructure stays energized so we don't have to shed even more load when electric generators can't operate. We need to be thoughtful and more targeted about how the load curtailment process works, even if that means making additional investments, meaning it means spending money. Another part he made, I certainly agree that winterization can be enhanced all the way from oil and gas wellhead to natural gas processing plants to the power generation facilities and the poles and wires. He said, I can't emphasize enough, we have to create and maintain formalized protocols for communication and coordination across every part of our industry and across sectors. And this is part of the big point. They do this all the time within the grid, the operators, and retail providers, but they weren't reaching out to the other side. The 10-year ago, 2011 event, and I pointed this out in our original podcast, that's where ERCOT failed because we learned then what happens. If you haven't identified all your gas, your points of gas delivery, compressors and everything like that, They ended up turning off the very gas they needed to produce the energy that they were trying to save by turning stuff off. Now, that's a failure. More bureaucrats won't make that better. I'm just telling you, more bureaucrats and more government won't make that better. That's just a failure, period. So there you have it. This is an extremely good bit of information from the Luminant from VistraCorp's CEO. Back in a moment on Pratt on Texas, my friends.
It's the talk of Texas. Pratt on Texas.
My entire trip, hotels, food, transport, and fun for both Isabel and me to Dental Care's Dr. Silvia Zuniga in Costa Rica cost us less than half my lowest dental work quote at home. I'm not alone in learning how much of a do-not-miss opportunity this is. A farmer from Crosby County had dental work needs that would have cost $25,000 here. He went to Dr. Zuniga at Dental Care, a cosmetic dental specialist, by the way, and had all 28 of his teeth crowned, each shaped uniquely for him, and 2 root canals he needed, all for under $10,000. He had a great time, went to the Pacific Side beaches for a few days too, and his total hotel bill for the entire trip was under $1,000. Costa Rica is one of the hottest tourist destinations in the world. It's very safe, very easy to get around in, and not expensive to fly to from Texas, including on Southwest. If you want top dental work at affordable prices, learn more about Dr. Silvia Zuniga and Dental Care by clicking the banner at PrattOnTexas.com. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun.
You gotta stop by before they multiply. Gafford Pest Control.
Protect your family from bees, carpenter ants, termites, and bed bugs with effective professional service from Gafford Pest Control. Keep your family safe and clean with Gafford. Call Gafford Pest Control, 792-4292.
Gafford Pest Control.
Your 401k is likely one of your most important assets, but it's only one part of a comprehensive retirement strategy. Edward Jones can help you understand how your retirement assets fit into your entire retirement picture so you can work toward meeting your unique retirement goals. Contact Mark Miller, your Abilene Edward Jones Financial Advisor, at 3849 Oldham Lane or visit edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, making sense of investing, member SIPC.
Native Texan, or just got here as soon as you could. Welcome to Pratt on Texas. Here's your host, Robert Pratt.
State Representative Matt Schaefer is working hard to try to get his colleagues in Austin to fix the laws to rein in this out-of-control executive branch and governor that blatantly violating the Constitution under these disaster acts. One of the things he admits is there's not a lot of appetite to take on the governor by his colleagues, even though that's supposed to be their main role. Here's my interview with Matt Schaefer. One of my favorite state reps. Unfortunately, he represents Tyler out there with the beautiful Rose Gardens and the Rose Queen instead of where I am. But he used to live here. We knew each other back in the day in Young Republicans and other things. It's Representative Matt Schaefer. And Representative, again, great to have you back with us on Pratt on Texas. You put out a statement, and now there's some stories on it. Unconstitutional statute equals unconstitutional mask mandate. And there's no question. You even said, do you want a mask mandate with a criminal offense? Well, then pass a law. Well, these are the things that people who know how things are supposed to work have been saying for a long time. Talk about these bills you filed.
We have a separation of powers issue at play. What Governor Abbott did was he created a crime, associated a fine with it, and then directed law enforcement officers under his direction to go enforce it. If you have a situation where the same person can create a crime and also enforce it, you don't have a governor. You have a king. Our nation has rejected the idea of a king for over 200 years. It's a real problem. My bill does a couple of things. One, it repeals that part of the government code that unconstitutionally gives the executive the ability to create a crime. That statute is unconstitutional on its face. Secondly, I create a specific statute that says the governor may not issue an executive order that requires a person to wear a mask or personal protective equipment unless there is a law that's been created to give him that specific authority. A lot of people have strong opinions about masks. I've got my own. You've probably got yours. Everybody's got their opinion about it. But no one person should be making the decision on this. As you mentioned in your introduction, if the people of Texas believe that a mask mandate was the right thing to do in response to a pandemic or whatever, then our elected officials can meet, hold hearings, get input from the public, and start taking votes and let the deliberative body make a decision. Especially now that we're this far into it. This is not something where, you know, you had 1 or 2 days to make a decision and it just had to be done. And then now, you know, there's no way to get the legislature down to Austin. That's not what we're talking about. These bills are aimed at restoring the constitutional balance. I also filed another one today regarding that same part of the Disaster Act where we conform it to the Texas Constitution. The Texas Constitution is explicit that only the legislature has the power to suspend laws. In fact, pre-1873, it said the legislature or its authority. But what happened was that there was some martial law declared and some things the governor did that were really inappropriate. And the citizens of Texas, through the legislature, came back and amended the Texas Constitution, said, nope, governor, you do not have, the legislature cannot even delegate its authority to suspend a statute.
You know, Representative, I've covered that in detail since way back in the last spring. And, you know, a lot of people don't care. You've run into this too. They're living in fear and all of a sudden everything about rule of law goes out the window. And that's a tragedy in our society that needs to be dealt with as well. But it is amazing that someone who has long been a constitutional conservative and a judge and an attorney general would sit there and just completely ignore that explicit part of the Constitution and continue to do so and refuse to call the legislature in. I mean, this whole thing's messed up. Let's talk about the first bill on the mask mandates. Setting aside whether you think masks work or not, whether you ignore truth and science or not, but let's just set that aside. The fact of the matter is, Representative Schaefer, we have a completely separate set of law designed for infectious diseases. That on its face demonstrates how unlawful all of this has been to use the Disaster Act. And if you go over to the laws that are set up for infectious diseases, they require due process in every individual case. In fact, the only joint thing you can do without due process for an individual is an area quarantine. Nobody did that, not even during their shutdowns and telling everybody to stay home because they couldn't justify it under those laws. I mean, the very fact that the governor and others, local officials too, simply took action under an act that was clearly designed for physical damage like floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, fires. And you could say, well, if we didn't have the other body of law, well, that's all they had to to go on. The fact is, we have another body of law, and it's a proven body of law with a great history on communicable diseases, and it requires them to actually have go to court and have due process for people. They ignore that. This whole thing is really disgusting on that
level.
Well,
you remind me of the other bill that I filed, because we saw some of the business community that had been forced to shut down under the governor's orders come together and file lawsuits. And guess what? Just like we saw with the election debacle, their lawsuits were dismissed for lack of standing.
Which is insane.
Lack of standing. And so I have filed a bill that will give them standing and the ability to challenge these under strict scrutiny to say, okay, does this order actually mitigate a threat? And if it did, does it use the least restrictive means possible?
Which is the constitutional test, and everyone's ignored all of this through
this
thing. And people are okay with it. And it just simply, seriously, it boggles my mind. And I have been dealing with this, of course, since the whole thing broke, and I have become extraordinarily cynical about my fellow citizens in some sense. A lot of people get it. I mean, most of my listeners, folks, they understand this. But so many other people just didn't care. Oh, they're scared of something, so that's okay. A judge, a mayor, a governor can just go do any damn thing they want to because they're afraid of something. My gosh, this ought to scare you to the center of your bones about what the future of our society is if people simply hand over the law, due process, and everything, and just throw it all out the window because they happen to be scared.
Well, let's assume for the sake of argument that it was a good idea to have a mask mandate, okay? Let's assume that was the best thing to do.
Well, if we did, I'd be in jail if it was legal, but anyway, that's another matter.
The point is that you could do the right thing in the wrong way.
Sure.
And when we get a Democrat governor something.
Exactly.
Okay. And they declare a climate emergency or a racial discrimination emergency.
Boy, you're repeating me here. Exactly. What's going to happen then?
Then what's going to happen? And if you think a governor wouldn't do that, that's a Democrat. Look what happened with this cold snap. If you think that they won't take some extreme measures to say, you know, we're going to shut down refineries. You can't drill for oil. You can't drill for gas. We're going to do some
climate emergency. That's right.
Climate emergency. Gun violence emergency.
Yep.
Checks and balances. Checks and balances. If you make any one branch of government independent, then it becomes absolute.
Right.
You have to have the other branches to be a counterbalance to that. And that's what the legislature is supposed to do. You'd be surprised. There's not a lot of appetite to talk about doing something that's aimed directly at the governor's powers.
Yeah, because I'm not surprised. It's the wimpism we deal with in D.C. It's the wimpism we deal with down there. He may veto. He's got line item veto. If I go after the governor, he's gonna veto. Well, you're not going after the governor. You're going out to support the Constitution and the people you represent because they're all mad. And don't kid yourself. Your small business people, probably not a plurality, but a majority of them are angry as all get out, no matter what the local liberal chamber of commerce says. They're mad and they want your representation to stop this from happening in the future. So your colleagues need to man up or woman up a little bit on this, Representative Schaefer.
The first thing we do is I put my hand on a Bible, I raised my hand, and I swore an oath to defend the United States and the Texas Constitution. And the Texas Constitution has been trampled. Okay, we have a violation of separation of powers. We have a violation of Article 1, Section 28 of the Texas Constitution's Bill of Rights. And if this Republican legislature cannot remedy that this session, then I don't know what to say.
Well, it is. It's one of the biggest litmus tests we've ever seen, whether they like the fact that there's a litmus test or not. I will tell you this. Come next primary time, some of these folks are going to realize they needed to be more afraid of their Republican constituents than they did the governor, because people, and it's the people who give big campaign load donations in the local races, are extraordinarily upset with this because they've had their businesses destroyed. Some of them will survive and they'll still be out there, and I think some folks are going to be surprised at the kind of primary opposition they have if they don't work on it. Representative Schaefer represents Tyler. Again, I'll tell you, he's an old friend and he's one of my favorite state reps in the Capitol, and he's filing the right kind of legislation. So you guys, if you're ever out there and he gets in another tough race, you just remember that when you see that in the newspaper, and be sure you send a little support Matt Schaefer's way. Matt Schaefer, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you. And, you know, I wore out more than one pair of shoes living in Lubbock, Texas, and getting an education and washing windows and doing all sorts of stuff out there. It was a great place to be. I miss it.
Keep that six shooter at your side. Fret on Texas will be right back after this.
Founded by local resident Chase Powell, Lubbock Web Guys has been providing custom websites and digital marketing solutions for the West Texas community for over 15 years, specializing in custom websites, Google My Business optimization, search engine optimization, pay-per-click campaigns, and content creation. They build websites that build local business. If you want to have your website hosted by a professional that's not some big leftist corporation, you've got an option in the Lubbock area, LubbockWebGuy.com, LubbockWebGuy.com. Visit RaiderRedMeats.com to see specials and promotions on the best tasting, best quality beef, pork, and lamb. Not only do we beef up with Raider Red Meats, Isabel and I love their sausage, especially that with the cheese and Hatch green chili in it, and their spicy barbecue sauce has become a favorite. Some Raider Red Meats products available in select United supermarkets. Ask at the meat counter. Raider Red Meats does sell the best tasting, best quality beef, pork, and lamb. Learn more at RaiderRedMeats.com or visit their Texas Tech campus store in Lubbock where we shop.
You've never been one to look back or tolerate excuses, and you won't start now. A new year is dawning, a fresh start, and together we'll do what only Texas can, lead the way for the world. So here's to the entrepreneurs and to 2021, the year of the comeback. Vista Bank, entrepreneurs banking entrepreneurs since 1912.
Pratt believes the best way to ensure limited government is to limit the number of libs and rhinos who get elected to office. Don't worry, he'll tell you who they are. Now, more Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back. By the way, back to the testimony in Austin today in the hearings on the big Texas freeze-out. I thought this was funny. Houston Democrat, they mean this as a negative, as a headline in the Chronicle. Houston Democrat chastised for mentioning climate change at Texas power grid hearing. Well, all I can say about this story from Jeremy Wallace at the Houston Chronicle was that Senator John Whitmire used the word climate change, and all it showed was that State Senator Kelly Hancock, who was chairing the committee, is taking care of business because he immediately objected and said, look, this discussion is a discussion where we can chase a lot of rabbits, we can go in a lot of different directions, but we'd focus on what we're dealing with rather than getting off into a climate change discussion at this point. That's exactly right. And all Whitmire's doing is pandering to his Democrat base. Damn thing to do with climate change one way or the other. But that's how these people, you know how the game is played, ladies and gentlemen. The Texas Education Agency is asking the Supreme Court to hear its appeal in the Houston ISD takeover lawsuit. You know, they've been trying to take over Houston ISD and put in a board of managers since 2019, the end of 2019. And so far, everybody stood in their way. We'll see them. I mean, they're just exercising the law as it's written. They've done it to other districts, but Houston, they're so the biggest. And so somehow they can have all the failure they want, and they're outside the rules. I don't know. Terrible story out of Killeen. KWTX said a man shot his wife Tuesday night, shot her and killed her, then shot himself, murder, suicide. They had three children in there. The children were, says, uninjured. He was 34. He was 40. The wife was 34. It's kind of wrong to say they were uninjured. These children have been deeply, deeply injured and may never get over it. And it's just terrible, these things people do. And how about, speaking of school districts that do crazy things, the stench of local government. I've been following this out of Neches Independent School District. And the Texas Scorecard had another column on this by Era Column. Despite citizen opposition, the Neches ISD voted to extend indicted elementary principal Kim Snyder's contract. She was indicted and arrested on 2 February on third-degree charges of tampering with and fabricating physical evidence with intent to impair, as well as 5 misdemeanor counts of official impression after an investigation of sexual assault of a child. She's out on bail. Well, I don't know. You know, her contract was up. They renewed it. Why? They didn't have to. It's not a matter of firing her. Her contract's up. Parents are pretty mad. But isn't it funny that a lot of us don't get treated this way? I don't think it's very good management. But then again, that's why the school board's elected. People are mad enough, they'll clean house. Texas Democrats fought stringent COVID precautions for their election losses in Texas. That's right. After all their big soul searching, wasn't our fault, wasn't our message, not the fact that we're crazy left-wing liberals. Nope, it was COVID. But wait a minute, wasn't that y'all's policy? Keeping everybody at home and locked up and still your policy to keep everybody afraid? Well, if that really cost you elections in Texas, which it didn't, well, it's karma. You know what goes around comes around. Anyway, the border stuff continues. 71 illegal aliens found in a stash houses near the border most recently. 71 found and one in FAR, just in the Rio Grande Valley. Sorry, I was looking through my list of sheets. I have a whole bunch of other stuff from the border. Can't find it quickly enough. All right, my friends, back to the legislature. The National Rifle Association, the political side, ILA, Institute for Legislative Action, which I've long been associated, put out a piece saying that COVID and uncivil disorder, you know, these riots have illustrated in times of crisis or uncertainty, Americans buy guns. Well, that's right. And on Wednesday, Representative State Rep Cole Hefner of Mount Pleasant and Senator Brandon Creighton of Conroe filed House Bill 2249 and its companion, Senate Bill 18. These are NRA-backed bills which establish that firearms and ammunition manufacturers, distributors, wholesalers, suppliers, and retailers are essential businesses that shall not be prohibited by state or local officials from operating during a declared disaster or emergency. Now, they want you to support folks and tell them, remember in the last hurricane or two in Houston, remember the videos of the men from their own neighborhood with their shotguns standing in the middle of the intersections protecting the little store areas from looting and rioting? If you have Democrats have their way, these people will be arrested and there'll be no way to get ammo or guns. Now, not everybody can operate, but these are essential. When it comes time for a disaster, that's when many of you, or if conditions allow, even though it's extremely unpleasant, are basically going to have to be camping inside your business with no power, bringing your own water in, and inside your homes to protect your property from looters and rioters and all kinds of disaster. Well, you damn sure need to be able to buy a gun. I'll guarantee you there'll be a few gun stores that stay open because they have the same mentality. And I think that's right. We need to make sure that the firearms and ammunition dealers can't be shut down under the guise of, well, it's a disaster. That's when you need those weapons the most. Direct Action Texas had a good piece in all this legislation about election integrity. Same song, different verse. The left is setting up to try and block needed election integrity reforms in Texas. Their plan is, in part, a retread of the one used to slow and kill Senate Bill 9, an omnibus election integrity bill proposed in 2019, the last session. The tactic, vilify anyone who will prominently feature along the path to reform. In this case, they're aiming at Chairman of House Elections Committee, Representative Briscoe Kane. Before the snowstorm last week, a coordinated attack by multiple left-wing media outlets against Kane supporting identical liberal talking points was launched. Since election integrity is a priority of the grassroots and Governor Abbott, expect this drumbeat to grow. In interviews following his State of the State, Abbott stated SB 9 would be a good starting place for legislation. Several of the proposed provisions in SB 9 would have limited exposure to fraud and lowered distrust, exacerbated by the progressives' bum rush on election systems in 2020. That's bad news for would-be hacks looking to disrupt future elections as they were upended in 2020. Grassroots activists interested in passage of election integrity need to start bolstering lawmakers who will be integral to the process, including Chairman Kane. His office number, 512-463-0733, or just look it up in the TLO and the Texas Legislature online. Chairman Briscoe Kane. The Elections Committee should prioritize reforms that build trust in elections, and bills headed to the floor should be meaningful, not performative, and include, at a minimum, reforms to list maintenance, including enforcement, reform mail-in balloting to protect against abuse, and stop big tech companies from interfering in elections. There are other strong measures, but these represent an axis of reforms that will ensure fair elections in Texas in 2022. That is right. And the key part of this story was, before the big snowstorm took over the news, whole bunch of left-wing, what they call progressive media sites, which are nothing but propagandists, from the newspapers to you name it, all of a sudden came out with a whole bunch of stuff to pressure the chairman and try to go against Chairman Kane. And they all had the same talking points, which just proves, once again, they're not independent media outlets. They're they're propaganda outlets for the left. They were prepared, and they'll ratchet this back up. And you'll see nothing get done. Everybody who wants election reform will be called a racist, a vote oppressor, and you name it, unless you tell your state reps you expect serious election reform in Texas. That is extraordinarily important, ladies and gentlemen, extraordinarily important. By the way, I mentioned those border stories I couldn't find. Here they are. Biden cancels Trump program that targeted sex offenders living in the country illegally. That's right. I mean, it's unbelievable. What, the Democrats don't even think you ought to go after sex offenders that are living here illegally? And border police arrested human smugglers and 230 illegal aliens in the Laredo area. That from the Texan.news. That happened last Friday through Monday over the weekend. And congratulations go out to the folks of Carbon, which is a little bitty town south of Eastland. They've become the 20th town in Texas to be to adopt Sanctuary City for the Unborn Ordinances. Way to go, folks. Long live liberty, long live Texas, and may God bless us all. Adios, mis amigos.